You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Many families maintain holiday traditions that have been passed on through generations, and one of the most common, of course, involves a lot of food, especially sweets. With decadent holiday recipes now making their yearly appearances, we're faced with making tough culinary decisions, and the battle for self-control can be difficult for adults, but even harder for kids. What's the best way to instill good eating habits in our children during the holidays and throughout the year? Well, here with some thoughts on the matter are Diane Harris-Brown, Director of Educational and Community Programming at the James Beard Foundation, Leslie Bouchara, Deputy Director of Education and Guest Services at the Children's Museum of Manhattan, and Jahangir Mehta, Executive Chef and owner of the New York City restaurants Graffiti and Metaphor. He also runs Candy Camp, cooking classes for children designed to build interest in more diverse foods. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
I'm going to throw this out to all of you, but what's wrong with a little indulgence during the holidays? Can't we just eat less in the weeks afterward? Julia Child used to say, put all the butter in this and then don't eat a lot of butter the next day.
She was a wise woman. Moderation in all things. And I think also a focus on sweets that are derived from nature, whether that be fruits or some combination thereof. There is a lot of creativity. We fall into the pumpkin pie and candy cane rut, and there's a lot more than we could do.
I'm assuming you agree, Leslie.
I do agree. I think, you know, talking about portion with kids, and I think, as Diane said, moderation. It's wonderful. I mean, the holidays are great to indulge in a little bit, and I think if we try to take that away from children, it makes them actually want it more.
Right. Jahangir, you teach cooking classes for kids at your restaurant. Can you talk about some alternatives to butter-filled Christmas cookies?
I definitely feel there's nothing wrong in eating anything in life, but then it has to be imbalanced. And, I mean, look at Michael Phelps. He eats 2,000 calories worth of breakfast or something like that, but then he exercises it off. I mean, our children are not doing that much of outdoor activity. I think that's where the problem is lying nowadays. There's so much of playing games on the computer and stuff like that. I think if you exert that energy out, it's no problem at a young age to eat a little wrong or eat a little more of something, but still moderation, and not only in the terms of what you eat, but the quantity. Our portions are just too large. I think that's where the biggest problem lies.
In fact, people go to places where the portions are bigger, and
right.
They say, well, they have such great portions. But are there certain kinds of flavors that you use in holiday recipes that aren't necessarily associated with the palates of kids?
I think it's just like if you were going to make even a chocolate cake, use one of the better chocolates. Use a very rich dark chocolate which has less cocoa butter in it. I mean, there is no need to put in marshmallows as well as toppings of other chocolates. And like, just make it just too much. It's sometimes our stuff is just over the top. There is no need to again throw another icing layer. I think you can just cut back on a little and still let them eat some very, very rich foods. I think there's nothing wrong in that.
Leslie, what's the best way to introduce new foods and new tastes to kids? Can you walk us through the different ages? It's different when you have an infant and then when you have a small child. And then when you have a teenager.
Absolutely. I think introducing foods to young children, let's talk about 4, 5, and 6-year-olds, sometimes they will look at something and they'll say, ugh, I don't want to try that. The rule of thumb is to really try it 12 times. And so children, like adults, need time to get accustomed to the texture of something or the smell of something. And I think to be patient with them and to try to introduce it in creative ways. So, for instance, if you want to introduce broccoli, it isn't just, you know, setting down a plate of broccoli and say, here, eat this. It's maybe broccoli with a bit of cheese on it, or broccoli with some low-fat yogurt on the side, or broccoli with some hummus, and sort of getting them to look at taste and textures in different and creative ways, and not to be afraid of trying new foods, and also not to make them feel guilty if they don't like something that you say is healthy.
It's been my sense, just through observation, that kids who are introduced to a lot of different things when they're very young are much more likely to be open about foods later. Right. You're nodding your head, Diane. I was thinking one doesn't normally associate the James Beard Foundation with children. Do kids come to the James Beard dinners?
Very seldom, because the James Beard dinners are, in fact, designed and targeted for people who want a long, leisurely kind of celebratory indulgence with wine and so forth. We do have some at the actual James Beard house in Greenwich Village. We have an annual gingerbread workshop for children where they bake their own gingerbread, make their own houses, so it's kind of an art endeavor. But the outside the foundation, we've over the years had the privilege of having some wonderful partnerships, and one that's very active right now is this James Beard Family Chef Workshop with the Children's Museum of Manhattan, which is why we're here with Jahangir and Leslie, because cooking for children is such a live subject for chefs. There's so much enthusiasm. We've had no problem involving wonderful chefs using their creativity to come to the museum and do these presentations for children, and it's very much a part of our mission.
But Jahangir, most chefs have kids of their own, and so I'm sure they think about how they can apply what they know from their professional lives to getting their kids to try everything.
I think that's very, very true. I think they do. But sometimes I think they fall into a rut. Once they go to school, it's very hard to control what you're doing at home. You know, it's just that over there, you have to just let them do, okay, if the snack is something that's coming out from a box, I mean, what can you do as a even as a chef? So you try to stir children over. And I think sometimes, as he mentioned, it's how to change the aspect of how it looks, how it tastes. And that same thing, my children love dumplings, for example. So even what they don't like, I try and put it into the dumpling, because the thought of the dumpling eating is a bigger process than what is inside the dumpling for them. So that's how you try and just maneuver the change of what they like and push that envelope in a different way of making them try that food that they did not like.
I know somebody who owned a Chinese restaurant in Chinatown, and his complaint was, I've given my kids access to this incredible culinary history, and all they want to do is go to McDonald's because that's what the kids in their classes want to do. So there's that whole matter of peer pressure as well.
I think you're always going to have that peer pressure, and you're always going to have things on TV or on billboards and signs that influence children. But I think at the end of the day, they're in your home, you buy the food, and I think if you are inspired and creative with your kids about talking with them about a balance and about trying new foods, that's really all that you can do. I think for parents, what's been great about having the James Beard Foundation at the museum is that they get inspired again to try new ways to cook, to use dumplings as an example, or even to try hamburgers. So maybe it's a turkey burger, or maybe it's adding in broccoli to a turkey burger. But if parents are inspired, then I think children will see there's an opening.
There was a big debate some years back about whether you trick your kids into eating good food by including the broccoli and the hamburger.
Right. But I think it's also a lot of children love juices, okay? So why not just start it with apple juice with a little bit of that little tinge of ginger? So finally, their palate is getting used to one more spice in there. Or, I mean, main thing is just diluting even just the outside drinks. If you're just not managing to do your own apple juice, just dilute them with water, because they're so sweet that their palate is just getting used to that is what I need to accomplish sweet. They just don't know how sweet can be lowered.
Diane, how do you choose the chefs to participate in the program with the Children's Museum?
Well, we've been, as an organization, involved with various children's programs, including Spoons Across America and Wellness in the Schools. So we've really looked back on the list of chefs that have a history of wanting to uplift kids and engage them, and there's no better way to learn about a food than to handle it and cook it and taste it and take ownership of that food. And there are chefs, certainly including Jahangir, but we've had a great number of others who will say, anything I can do to help children become more enlightened eaters, I'm there for you.
Well, that's one thing. It's another thing to actually start a class to teach kids to cook. What led you to do that, Jahangir?
I think I started it years ago. It was just out of one day when I got this idea. Firstly, always to even educate kids, because at that time I used to work as a pastry chef. And most of the time, people always blamed their parents when when they would say, oh, the kids, when they come to the restaurant, it's always they want is a burger, or they want this, or they want that. And it's so annoying. Why don't they let them eat something else? And I took a step back and said, why don't we also take some responsibility and say, you know what, why don't we educate them? Because the parents are not managing to do that. Why don't we as chefs try and do that? And that time I did that to a certain extent. And I started it initially mainly on Mother's Day, because it was something which I have noticed over the years is on Father's Day, mothers take a lot of like, okay, what should we make? What should we do? It's always that. And Mother's Day is all, oh, let's just go out, treat mom out in a restaurant. It was never do anything more than just spending the money. The father just wanted to give a wallet and that's it. And so I thought, why don't we teach them how to make breakfast in bed for their mom? And that is how it all started.
Now, Leslie, I've spoken to a number of people who have been involved with programs to get kids growing vegetables. And they say that when the child grows the vegetable, he or she is much more likely to eat the vegetable. Mm-hmm. And that's one way to get them involved. But we can't do that with everybody.
I think what's interesting, the point you made before about the sneaky chef and, you know, hiding things from children, I actually think that the more you get children involved in the planning and the cooking and the shopping and the thinking about what they're going to eat, the more invested they become.
And starting at what age?
Well, I think you can start as young as two. I mean, you bring them to the grocery store and you can start by sorting and looking at colors. You know, where's the yellow banana? You know, wow, an eggplant is purple. You know, these are things that we're going to cook together. Now, children at that young age aren't going to be chopping, but they can certainly help wash the food. They can help set the table. So you make the family meal really something that the whole family is involved with, so the children take pride in it. And if they've picked out the fruits and the vegetables and they've actually been a part of this, they're more likely to try it, and they're more likely to say, to be proud of that. And I think when families start to do that together, it's an important step toward understanding a food history together and making tradition.
My guests are Leslie Bouchard, Deputy Director of Education and Guest Services at the Children's Museum of Manhattan, Diane Harris-Brown, Director of Educational and Community Programming at the James Beard Foundation, and Jahangir Mehta, Executive Chef and owner of the New York City restaurants Graffiti and Metaphor, but also the man behind Candy Camp, which teaches kids how to cook. Do you teach them about portion sizes as well? Because you mentioned that earlier.
Yes, we definitely try and tell them that that is the most important thing, is moderation. Everything is good for you. Everything in moderation is good for you. There's nothing right or wrong, but just eating it at the right time, eating it correctly. And even methods, I mean, you can just change that thinking to a certain extent. It's not about always about like how you should just never eat anything fried. It's fine if it was shallow fried, or even if it was, but in moderation. There's no need to have 17 ounces of things. Like, I mean, that is where the problem is lying.
Well, we have these supersize options at so many fast food restaurants. Diane, can you talk about portion size and how the food pyramid has been changed into the food plate?
Well, I think one change that I've seen in my 25 or so years in this world of food has been the center of the plate, not necessarily protein, animal protein. It can be vegetables, it can be pasta, whole grains, lentils, and I think that those are changes that are coming very gradually in the American food palate, but I think that they do help. You can eat a lot of lentils or lima beans.
You can eat a lot of lentils. I'll eat some.
Well, as in terms of satiation and a sense of fullness, very often you know, these are good options to explore in addition to the typical chicken McNuggets.
And do you get good feedback from parents?
It's mixed, I have to say. Sometimes we need the children to teach up, say, you know, mom, hey, you know, this is asparagus, which mom may never have experienced. And this is how you cook it, and isn't it delicious? And would you please buy some the next time you go to the store?
Right. Now, John Gere talked about kids not getting enough exercise. The Children's Museum kind of promotes exercise. Mm-hmm. But did you start seeing kids who we might call obese in increasing numbers over the years?
Absolutely, we did. I mean, I think the museum has been deeply committed to health, you know, since the early 90s, and we've been on the forefront of actually seeing families every day come in. And we noticed a real change in children's access to exercise, to being outside, and a change in how they looked physically and what they were exposed to. And so part of our mission has been to create exhibits like our new Eat, Sleep, Play exhibit that actually gets families exercising together, but also giving them strategies for how to do that in New York City, where it isn't always safe to go to the parks, you know, things that they can do at home as well. And I think, again, it goes to that balance. Children and parents need to exercise at some point every day.
A recent article in the New York Times reported that after three decades of rising obesity rates in children, a few cities are seeing a decline. So do you think we've turned a corner?
I think we're turning a corner. I don't think we've turned. I think there's a lot more education out there. There's a lot more access to understanding health messages.
Most of the decline in obesity has been among upper-middle-class white kids. So some of those parents have gotten the message, but you have to get the message to a lot more people.
Right.
Well, I'm going to have a tip of the toque to the First Lady, because if anybody was out there, you know, preaching and setting the example and walking the walk, Michelle Obama, thank you very much. And she is the recipient of one of our James Beard Foundation Leadership Awards for setting this incredible example and really pushing the American public to be aware that eating good food and exercising are elementary to good health.
Jahangir, are there some surprising dishes that you found were popular with kids?
I think it's not always the case with just one type of kids. Sometimes it also depends on your race, your background. Lentils are very acceptable with the with Spanish-speaking countries and India and Asian kids. I think it just somehow resonates very well with them. Some things just don't. I mean, sometimes textures make a very big difference. So it's all to do with, I think, how people like mouth feels, how people like a few things. And it's just changing that. And another thing is, as I always say, is if you had to eat a cookie, if you had to eat something, make it at your own place. If they even like chicken nuggets, buy the good old chicken. Just make it at your own house versus buying store-bought. Because firstly, half of the things which are store-bought has preservatives. So at least you're eliminating that. If you had to make a chocolate chip cookie, at least making it at your home, it just has pure chocolate, sugar, flour versus I don't even know how many preservatives they put in the other things that they do.
Well, we hear that kids really don't like foods that are highly spiced, and yet the Indian cultures, all the cuisines from India have spicy food.
Right.
There are spicier foods in Thailand, spicy foods all over the world. Kids eat them.
That's true.
So
is
this also to some degree just that we live in a culture where spices aren't heavy spicing anyway isn't appreciated in the same way?
I definitely feel, I think it's what you start from a very young age. I mean, I was doing this program with Whole Foods, and I went to about 18 different Whole Foods in the country. And it was funny, we had this program where we told them, okay, just shop around and you have to pick up something that you've never eaten. The kids in New York picked up emu eggs and like something very, very different, and which I would say, okay, yes, I understand you would have not eaten that. I went to like further in and like in some places, but there was one place which really shocked me was in New Orleans. Some children picked up tomatoes, strawberries, and they really told me they had never eaten that. And I was in shock.
That's one of the great food cities of the world.
Yeah, and I was so shocked that a child has never tried these two things. Maybe he or she did in a different way and not realize it, but had never eaten a raw tomato or a strawberry, and that's very sad.
We also saw that we do a lot of outreach work around health, and we were in the South Bronx, and we were doing a program with families there, and we brought out a plate of raw vegetables of broccoli and cauliflower and carrots, and the mothers said to us, oh, this isn't cooked. We can't eat this. And we said, no, this is going to be a wonderful snack for your kids, and we also brought out the hummus. And the mothers were tasting the raw vegetables for the first time. And we talked about how instead of a bag of chips, you can use the broccoli or the cauliflower as a snack.
Now, before you go, just one other thing, Leslie. What was the mood at the museum this weekend in the aftermath of what happened in Newtown? Were people talking about it? Were kids scared?
I think that what happens at the museum, it's very similar, unfortunately, to what happened after 9/11, which is where we saw families come to the museum and say to us, we know that this is a safe place to come with our children, and we want to come here and emotionally feel safe and be in a place that is fun and engaging. And I think when you have young children, there's only so much that you can saturate them with. You want them to feel safe in the world. So I think families came and kind of decompressed and used us as a safe place.
A lot of people are arguing over just how much you tell kids and how is there something that a children's museum can do to educate kids without scaring them?
I think that there is. We've been doing a lot of work around Hurricane Sandy, around helping children feel that they can be part of a community and that they can give back to children. And I think that you can do that. I think in something like this, because it is such a terrible tragedy and really trying to understand it, that it's really for older kids, I think, to talk more personally at home. But when there is an activity that children can do to help other children, whether it's gathering toys, making cards, or being part of a community effort, I think that's always very important.
Right. I also think fear breeds fear. I think giving them the strength, giving them, showing them compassion. I mean, the gentleman, I can't remember his name, he lost a daughter or a son. And he was, I mean, one of the best statements he did is, I even pray for the family who did this killing. I think that is so noble. Not everyone has the courage to even say a statement like that. I mean, I pray for a family who had this, the man who did the killing. And I mean, that's very noble. And I think to show that compassion in a child at that age, that you have to forgive, you have to be, I mean, I know what happened was so wrong. And when it happens to you, it's a whole different issue where then when it happens, but it happened to him and still he's being so strong in sending the right message. And I give him so much credit, and anyone else, and people like your organizations or any organizations which work with children so closely.
Thank you all so much for being with us. Jahangir Mehta is executive chef and owner of the New York City restaurants Graffiti and Metaphor. He also runs Candy Camp, cooking classes for children designed to build interest in more diverse foods. Diane Harris Brown is director of educational and community programming at the James Beard Foundation, which is working with the Children's Museum of Manhattan. Leslie Bouchard is deputy director of education and guest services at that museum. Thank you all for being on our show.
Thanks
for giving us the opportunity.